TFM.
This is J.G. Hertz, the General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I hope you like this spot I've set up for us. I thought dangling over the promenade seemed like the perfect place for podcasting.
Well, Chris, it's just so comfortable here, although I do wish it had better lumbar support, in all honesty. You know, as I get a little bit older, it's just not quite as comfortable to sit without that kind of support. But, you know, the view from here is fantastic. And, who is that? Ooh, we need to go meet them. Oh, goodness. Yeah.
They're okay.
No, we got to go right now, Chris.
I was just picturing, like, Jake and Nog meeting up again on the station, like, 40 years later, and they've got recliners up there on the promenade.
That'd be fantastic.
And they're leaning back, yeah.
That would be amazing. I'd love that.
That'd be fantastic. All right. Well, before we get started, Matthew, also, I'd just like you to repeat something after me. The village will not be destroyed.
The village will not be destroyed?
Good. Now louder so everyone can hear.
The village will not be destroyed.
Well, you sound like a real Syrah, Matthew.
You know, I've been training, actually. I try to keep that under wraps. You know, I don't like to brag, but I have been training for this for a very long time. In fact, in all honesty, my regiment looks a lot like Rocky IV.
I was also just imagining that if Cole Meany ever wants to make some extra money down the road, a Broadway musical, Syrah Syrah.
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, I love it. Well done, Chris. Well done.
All right, everyone. We're going to be continuing our 30th anniversary rewatch of Deep Space Nine today with the 14th episode of Season 1, at least if you count Emissary as 1 and 2. It is The Storyteller, and here's a quick rundown. An uninvited guest menaces a Bajoran village, and only one man can save the day, Miles O'Brien. At least that's what he has been told. There's just one problem. The solution relies on his storytelling skills, and he's nowhere near as talkative as his new buddy, Julian Bashir. Can he engineer a yarn to chase away the cloud creature? Meanwhile, Sisko mediates a territorial dispute between two Bajoran villages, and Nog flirts with one of the leaders. But the real action is down on the planet. The Syrah has left the building, the Dalrock has arrived, and a bucket of oatmeal ain't gonna chase it away. So, Matthew, time to tell some stories here with this episode that, we have to admit, really kind of does feel like a Next Generation episode, and there's a good reason for that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the most interesting thing about this is the fact that this was a story that was supposed to be in TNG, especially in the first season, which, you know, we all know how people feel about the first season of TNG these days. In fact, most people feel about the first season of TNG the same way a lot of people feel about the original series. People almost want to erase it from history. And so the fact that this episode would find a new life on Deep Space Nine is pretty fascinating, especially since, you know, the reason that it did is because Michael Piller liked the concept and kept it alive in his mind until they got to Deep Space Nine. And I think, you know, this is one of the places where, you know, in many ways we talk about a lot on this show, the ways in which it differentiates itself from TNG. Mm-hmm. And I think the one of the ways that it does is that this story is not one that I think would really necessarily work in any other Star Trek show in the way that it does here. And that's because it utilizes what we know of Bajoran mythology with the idea of an orb fragment. And having those things already clearly set out in this show is what makes this episode work in any way, shape, or form. And without those things already having been given to us about the Bajorans, their belief systems, and I think, of course, the idea of these orbs being supernatural in origin in many ways, that's everything that makes this story not just feel silly, not just almost feel like a fairy tale from Grimm back in the day, right. Grimm's fairy tale. So, I mean, this is an incredibly interesting thing about this episode. And I don't know, Chris, do you think, I mean, I was trying to think back, like with Enterprise or, you know, Could do you feel like the show would work really in the way it does here in any other series?
Well, I think it would work on The Next Generation. When I think about it, I think about the storyteller aspect of it. So what I think they did well here is when they pulled this out, and it was a case that, yeah, Michael Piller liked the concept. It was also a case of, hey, we need a story. What do we have in the drawer? Maybe this one will work. Let's try to finally do this. But what I think they did well is that they took the core of the story and then they incorporated elements that made it work for Deep Space Nine. So you mentioned the orb fragment, and then there's the fact that you've got kind of, it's a territorial dispute, but you've got affairs going on between communities on Bajor that require some intervention, some mediation, and that's why Sisko's there in the first place. And so that was an element that was DS9. And then you've also, you're able to do character development. You've got the start of the Miles-Julian friendship, which we'll talk about more. And it gives you an opportunity also to show, to grow the Nog-Jake friendship and also show the influence of Sisko on Jake, which we can talk about some more as well. But I think that the idea of mediating a dispute between two villages is something that you could definitely see Picard doing on The Next Generation. I think you could also see Janeway or even Archer or anyone else doing it, but it feels like a TNG idea, that kind of thing where the Enterprise is cruising around the quadrant, kind of keeping the peace in the Federation at this point in time. The orb fragment thing is interesting to me because they established that there are these orbs and that they have some kind of mystical, magical, spiritual powers. But the idea of a fragment was new and I don't believe ever comes back again. After this, we always see whole orbs in the cases that are open.
Yes.
And so the idea here that a little piece of an orb could break off and that it could have some power on its own, I think shows how they were still figuring out what the orbs were and how they would be used. But at least it's definitely a DS9 element that's going on there. So that's kind of where I see it as, I think the core of the story would have worked well on The Next Generation. And easily, this story could be told with TNG wrappings and characters, but it also lent itself to DS9, and they were able to put in the necessary elements so that it means something to the series as it's developing.
I definitely, the other side of this story could absolutely work on, you know, I think any of the series, 100%. Mm-hmm. I think that the reason that this story did not work in previous shows was because they did not have those preconceived elements of the orb, this race that's, you know, very spiritual. And it's those things that I think really add something special to this and make that part of the story work, which is the main part. I mean, that's the A story. The B story is what's happening with Sisko. So the fact that they really couldn't find their footing for this story before Deep Space Nine, I think does legitimize the fact that this doesn't work as a story if you don't have those elements already kind of preconceived in the very essence of your show. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that I really respond to by watching this episode still is it, you know, where Star Trek is at its best in each of the series is by finding ways to create stories that could only really fit in that specific series. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, we'll talk about later, but I also think that because this is also a big story about two character groups, you know, you've got Julian and Miles, and then you have Jake and Nog. They're kind of the strange foursome in this group where there's a lot of mirroring going on between the characters as well and the way things work. I think that's also very interesting. I mean, you know, Nog is very akin to the Julian Bashir in this episode, much more ready to accept whatever's happening, kind of thinking outside the box, being able to fix things from their unique perspective. And then you have Jake and O'Brien, who are actually very similar. And they're kind of the ones who are, you know, just almost very by the book. You know, they're not able to really, they're not really thinking outside of the box in the same way. They're not as open to those kind of things. And they're much more straight-laced, you know. And so I think that's really interesting. And I don't think that would happen on TNG because we never really get into characters like that. And, you know, you might have maybe possibly got this in Voyager, but the only other series where I think you could maybe do something like this is honestly Enterprise, I think, because they had a feeling for their characters more akin to Deep Space Nine than any of the other shows did until the more modern era. And so that's to me, again, it's what makes this an interesting watch all these years later.
Well, I think it highlights how many fans criticized Deep Space Nine when it first aired for being stationary, and some fans even today continue to criticize Deep Space Nine for being stationary because they think that Star Trek is always about a crew being on a ship and going somewhere. But I think this story highlights how having that stationary location where you have a lot more going on day to day allows you to introduce the necessary elements for a story, because if the Enterprise visited a planet where two villages were having a territorial dispute and Picard had to mediate that, that would work as a story, as part of an episode, but it's not enough to support an entire episode. And what you end up with here is you also have the character story with Julian and Miles. And then you also have the Jake Nog story, which you've been talking about. And then also you have the Bajoran elements, which aren't something introduced only for this episode, which is what typically happens in TNG and Voyager.
Exactly.
Where you visit a planet and you might be able to insert elements like the orbs or spirituality, but you're doing it only for the purpose of that one story. And so it's like taking the lid off of a box and looking inside, and then you put the lid back on and you go off to the next box, right? But here, because of that wider stationary nature of Deep Space Nine as a show, those elements were already there, and then you can build on them. So while I don't think this is one of the greatest episodes of the series or the first season.
Oh, absolutely.
It does leverage those elements, yes. And it highlights the benefits of that framework for storytelling,
mm-hmm.
which is something that I think a lot of viewers didn't appreciate until many, many years later.
Well, and I can say, you know, I think that when you mentioned this is not one of the greatest episodes of Deep Space Nine, I think that one of the reasons that that's honestly the case is that, and they weren't thinking about this in the long term. Mm-hmm. But I think the way that this episode and one of its major downfalls is that it makes the Bajoran people look really gullible and kind of stupid in their faith. And instead of more critically minded that it, and basically I think what the series is able to do as we move forward, which is to really show, especially through people like Kira. I mean, we already had, we had the conversation about Kai Opaka last time, and you see others throughout the series where their faith is so ingrained in who they are, but it's not a faith that is not, doesn't have any intellectual reason to it or thought process behind it. They're not people who are afraid to question things. These people, I think, come off as so gullibly silly that that's probably the thing that makes this episode not as good as it could have been if, say, it was in season two, even, where I think they really start to get the Bajorans, the idea of the spirituality, the type of people who, you know, really believe this, and then the others that are just using it for benefit of themselves, and it becomes much more nuanced. Here, I think it's just, it's not as nuanced as I would hope it to be, but it's also something that makes sense because we're in the first season and they still don't quite have all this figured out about the Bajorans in the first place.
Yeah. Well, that's, I think that's the core of it, is that they haven't yet figured out who the Bajorans are. And once they do figure that out, and once we know how ancient Bajoran civilization is, then the way things are portrayed in this village where the Dalaran comes, especially, doesn't jive with the Bajorans as we come to know them.
Right.
But I think it also shows that the origin of this story goes all the way back to the first season of The Next Generation. I have a feeling that in the original concept, the idea probably was that this creature was coming to a village on a planet that was much less advanced than the Bajorans. And so I think of something like Who Watches the Watchers, for example, where those people, they don't quite understand the world yet. And so they could believe that this is some kind of creature. Whereas I think that Bajoran science would certainly be at a level where the people wouldn't so easily fall for the idea of this creature.
Exactly. Yeah.
Now, they introduced the idea of the prophets and that somehow the prophets are sending the Sarah to protect the village. But I also think that doesn't really jive with the Bajoran culture that we come to know after this. So this is one of those, we're figuring out the elements of our show and we're building a story on an old concept, and we're trying to make it fit together. We're trying to make it work, and it's okay for an individual story, but it doesn't really reflect Bajor, I think.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think that this fits as well as it possibly could in Deep Space Nine, and yet it doesn't fit perfectly, and I don't think it would really fit anywhere else. But also, you know, in hindsight, of course, when we look back, there's plenty of ways which this could have been revised, I think, to be a much better story.
Although some of those ideas for revision require what comes later, and then you go backwards and you try to apply it, right? Which which you can't do at the point when you're writing this. So, so that I think they did a as good as they could of making this fit into the DS9 framework. So another thing to talk about, though, while we're talking about these villagers who were scared of this cloud creature, is the idea here of collective belief. And it's explained here, Hovath, who is the apprentice to become the Sarah, he explains that A long time ago, the village was deeply divided by hate and distrust, and so the Syrah found a way to bring everyone together by using this fragment of an orb to give a physical manifestation to the creature in the story that he was telling. And that was a way of creating some social stability in the village. Now, we don't know how far back this goes, given that the Syrah that we see, he's an old man. Was there someone before him? I got the impression that he is the actual person who created this. So it probably only goes back some decades, maybe, which isn't really that long, which plays into our whole question a moment ago of would the people in this Bajoran village fall for this in the first place? But they have. But I think the interesting question is, just from a social commentary point of view, is getting everyone on the same page in terms of believing something, and where is the strength in collective belief, and what role does that play in creating social stability, which definitely was important for us as humans as our civilization grew and evolved. And I think that I know I have questioned in modern society whether things like this are really necessary. Although when I look at what's happening in the world in recent years, I definitely see what happens when you peel away those frameworks where people have come to have a shared belief in something for the benefit of creating a peaceful and prosperous culture and, you know, community to live in.
Yeah, I think this is one of the places where the episode does actually really get things right, in the sense of, you know, when we think about Bajor itself, its collective belief in the prophets, it's what got it through this occupation, the occupation that happened with the Cardassians. And of course, we're playing on the idea of the Holocaust with the Jews during World War II, and the fact that we think of Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. You know, the whole idea of that one cannot get through these type of things if you don't have something to hold on to. And of course, here it's portrayed as something bigger than oneself, right? And of course, that's what the Bajorans believe in with the prophets. And I think that that's so key to the whole series. You know, so really, actually, we are in this episode, I think, laying a foundation for that, even in a very silly way, this idea. But I think when we think about the overarching, you know, I think that it can be stated as a fact that human beings are better when they have core values that can bring them together and allow them to work together. Isn't that the whole point of the Federation in the first place? And so I think that that is absolutely the case. And I think that it's shown, too, that nothing brings people together like religion. Nothing brings people together as a common belief in the largest questions being answered in and through a god. And I think that's the thing that, of course, we're actually going to explore then in Deep Space Nine that no other Star Trek series has ever explored before or since in this way. And what that can actually do for society, and to show that in a positive, not a negative light, which is also revolutionary. And so all of these things, I think, are incredibly interesting. And this only figuratively scratches the surface of what Deep Space Nine is going to dive into over the next 6.5 seasons. That's fascinating to me. And it's one of the reasons, of course, that I love this show so much. And it's one of the reasons why I think you and I, through all these years, have had such interesting discussions about this show, coming at it from different directions.
Yeah, I think another thing that it highlighted to me is that within communities, when you have shared beliefs or shared goals, the leader matters as well. The belief in the leader matters, because if you look in the story, the Sirrah at the beginning, everyone believes in him and he can tell the story and the Dalaran goes away. And then when Miles tries to do it, it doesn't work. He's saying the same words, and you might say, well, he's not saying it with the same conviction, which that matters too, right? If someone is an inspirational leader or not. But then when Hovoth gets the chance to have a second chance at the end, which the leader of the village didn't want to give him, the people suddenly, I think because of Miles's failure, they need someone else to believe in. And so then they believe in Hovoth, and then he succeeds where he failed before. Mm-hmm. So belief in the leader is very important.
Well, and I think it also comes down to the fact that true belief actually has a physical manifestation in the people, right? And everything that's happening throughout the rest of their lives, true belief creates a sense of actual change in them. It creates an actual, not just a sense, but an actual change, right? It influences everything about them. Somebody who truly believes something, everything about their life is driven by that thing. Otherwise, they don't actually truly believe it, you know, because as we judge them by their actions, we can see, yeah, that doesn't really work. That doesn't really compute. You know, you don't actually believe that because there's no evidence of that belief in your life based on the actions that you're taking. Mm-hmm. And so true belief actually has a physical manifestation in one's life through the actions that they take throughout their life, the things they choose to do and the things they choose not to do. And so I think that's something that this episode rightly taps into as well, in an incredibly silly way, of course, but it's true, right? Like, and I think that's another interesting thing. And it's something to which we will actually discuss further throughout the series in a much more nuanced and, I think, appropriate way than this episode does.
Well, yeah, it might be a silly way, but it does very vividly illustrate what you're saying, which is that there is a physical manifestation to belief.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And again, it's not in a way that is, you know, incredibly nuanced or interesting, or I think it's in a way that actually almost makes the viewer think of those with those beliefs as kind of silly. But that's something that this series will fix in the future. And I think that's the thing that makes it most interesting, is that we're not going to treat people in this series as, you know, if you have these beliefs, you come across as just kind of like a doof, you know, and that's a very good thing.
Well, it's definitely true. If this episode, if the exact episode were done in, say, season 5 or 6, these villagers would have been far more nuanced and their reaction would have been far more nuanced, and they would have come across quite differently than they do here. What would you have thought if the Dalaran cloud had formed a face and asked for a starship?
Yeah, but that did not happen.
Before we move away from the village, one thing that I did want to ask you about: if you think it would have strengthened the story by connecting the plots. At first, I wasn't even clear. I had to really think about it and go back and check. The fact that the village where the Dalaran comes is not one of the two villages that are fighting with each other about the territory and where the river is flowing. So we've actually got three villages in play here, three communities in play on Bajor. It seemed a little bit odd to me that the Dalaran village wouldn't be one of the two where the leaders have come to the station to settle their disagreement. I suppose that it does broaden the scope of what's happening on Bajor, but it also feels like from a storytelling perspective, you could have created a little more connection and synergy with what's going on here.
Yeah, I think that it works better to have them separated. Mm-hmm. I think it adds a really strange part of the story to have, you know, one of the villages being one of the ones affected. It just, mm-hmm. it doesn't fit with that story, right? Because that's truly a story about, you know, learning to become a leader and learning what it means to compromise, learning about how to think of things differently in a different way. Yes, there is a connection between those stories, but it's thematically. Mm-hmm. It doesn't need to be actually. And I think that's what actually makes the episode work better, is by just having the thematic connection instead of an actual connection.
What if the Dalrock were a water creature that was coming up out of the river and splashing everybody?
Both sides, yeah. Splashing, oh man! Both sides. So this is the abyss. Oh man! Yeah.
All right. So another important topic for me in here is fatherly influence. I like that we can see, just through Jake's actions and how respectful Jake is of Varys, the 15-year-old girl who is the leader of the Pakku. And you see, contrasting how he behaves and how Nog behaves, I felt like you could really see the influence that Benjamin has had on him, raising him, because Jake is, he's young and he's playful and he gets into trouble sometimes, but he's very much like his father. You can really see Benjamin in him in that influence. And then you contrast that with Nog, who you can see, I would say at this point in the writing, the absence of that fatherly influence, because I would say Rom becomes a pretty good father over time, but he's not that character right now. Right now, he's still the character that was Pit Boss in Emissary, and is still kind of the goofy Ferengi, right? I think you notice that Nog lacks an influence that Jake has, and you can see how that fatherly influence affects young people as they're growing up.
Yeah. You know, I think I really love that you pointed that out, because this is such a show that is about, you know, a father and a son, and showing the importance between having a good father-son relationship for young boys. And, you know, like you said, we do a great job of showing the lack of that here for Nog. You know, the thing that I was, I think, most impressed by, and I think this is completely unintentional in the episode at this point, but when I look at the long history then of the series, I believe that this is one of those points where they begin to pull from, where Nog finds a way to merge Ferengi ideas with more human ideas. And by doing so, I think it's a stepping stone for him to where he's going to go in the rest of the series. He's going to kind of bridge the gap between the Ferengi and the Federation in a way that no other Ferengi has. And part of that is by finding ways to take the philosophies of the Federation and the philosophies of the Ferengi and find where they actually work together. And that's partly what he does in this episode, right? He finds a way to help where Jake couldn't, because Jake doesn't have that. He's still in that place where I've got a problem, I ask my dad. Whereas Nog is having to learn to think for himself. And by learning to think for himself, he's also finding ways to bring things together that nobody else is thinking in this moment. And, you know, in many ways, he saves the day because of it. He's the one who helps her figure out, okay, I can give up something that they want, and then I can find a way to then get what I want, so we can compromise, we can work together, we can trade mutually beneficial trade, you know? And so yeah, I think that's really, really interesting to me.
Mm-hmm. And what's interesting there, too, is that this is a case where I was just talking about Benjamin's influence on Jake, but this is also a case where Nog and Benjamin Sisko are more aligned because they're both seeing that
right.
You need to compromise, right? You can't necessarily look at things from just one point of view and stick to that no matter what. And so there's also a cascading influence, I think, from Benjamin to Jake down to Nog as well, because like you're talking about how Nog will come to bridge human and Ferengi values and points of view. Jake is very important in guiding Nog, like giving him a companion that allows him to do that. And so that's where I also see sort of a cascading influence from Benjamin Sisko down to Nog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the other very important relationship in here is Miles and Jules. This is the start, really, of the Miles O'Brien, Julian Bashir friendship, which becomes so important, and I would say is definitely one of just a very small handful of the best relationships in Star Trek. And I like that the episode starts with Miles really not wanting to go on a trip with Julian.
Yeah, you know, what's really interesting about this episode is the way in which Julian seems to kind of grow a little bit as a character and seeing the fact that what he's asking for Miles to do, Miles isn't ready for and backs off. And I think, you know, that's growth for this character already to be able to see the ways in which he's affecting people, because it does seem a little bit like he's not just thinking about himself in this moment. Mm-hmm. And he's beginning to kind of see the way in which his actions affect others and, of course, his relationships. And I think it's really interesting, too, because, you know, he's very straight up with and forthright with O'Brien and saying, you know, I respect you. I think that you're a man that I would want to get to know more because of what I see in you, which in many ways, I think, you know, when you think about the fact that Julian is younger than Miles and a lot of what happens in their relationship, it's not just a friendship, but I do think there's a mentorship that happens unintentionally between the two characters. It's very mutual, but I do think that Julian ends up learning a lot from Miles about what it means to be a good man. And, you know, when you see the relationship then that Julian has with his father and the fact that they're estranged, it kind of makes sense that he would be attracted to an older man to help him, and especially one that he sees as already being a good man, to help him want to become more like that. And I think when we talk about the relationship between Jake and Benjamin, I think, you know, and we talk about that father-son relationship, there's another father, not really father-son, but there's a male mentorship relationship that's happening with these two characters of Julian and Miles. And I think that's actually really beautiful. Too many male friendships in shows feel like they have to go different directions. And I think this one clearly shows one that's absolutely 100% pivotal to many men. They might not have a great father figure, but they do need a father figure. And to find that in a deep and abiding friendship and mentorship is something that changes a lot of lives. I know it's happened in my own life and you know, it's something that I work to pass on myself.
Yeah, well said. On a lighthearted note related to the two of them, did you feel like when people bring gifts to Miles down on the planet, and Farron comes in and he says, "These gifts are for you, Sarah," and O'Brien says, "Well, tell them I don't want them." And Bashir is kind of chuckling, and he's like, "Oh, bring them right in. Put them wherever you like," O'Brien says. "Now look, Julian, Bashir says, "We're visitors here, Chief. It would be impolite to refuse our hosts." It felt to me like Jerry Seinfeld and George Costanza. I could just see that. I could see those two characters in that scene. It felt, yeah. And also, this was written in around the same time period that Seinfeld mm-hmm. was big. So anyway, I don't know if you picked up on that or not.
I think that it's funny you mentioned that, because it's also one of those places where you really see that Julian understands that how to play along with the game here. And,
right.
Brian doesn't just get it at all, which I think is really funny. So,
mm-hmm. yeah, exactly. Well, I feel like those are all the key elements of this story for me. So what are your final thoughts and what's your rating for the storyteller?
You know, I think this is it's a fun episode. It's not a great episode, but I think that it also, you know, for all that we're able to talk about it, and I think this episode does what a lot of the first season does, which is it finds way to plant seeds that are going to grow in the series. And to me, that's awesome. And I think I'm going to give this, I'm going to be a little generous, but I'm going to get 3.5 out of 5 shards of orb because it's still, I can still watch it and enjoy it. And, you know, again, I, in all honesty, just the conversation we were able to have and the depth of it as we were talking about, I was actually surprised some of the things that were coming out of my mouth, because I was like, it was clicking that there's a lot in this episode. Yeah. And that's right. Awesome. I love when that happens in these episodes.
So Shards of Orb, that was the title of Dalrock's first album, right?
Shards of Orb. Yeah, that's that really should be Dalrock's first album. So,
yeah. Well, I think I've said most of what I want to say about this one as well. I think that it feels like a script that got kicked around for a long time until they found a way to make it work. I think they did a good job of working it into the series. I think it has a lot of important things to say, and it scratches the surface of some of them. And the fact that they could work several of the things that we talked about, such as influence of fathers, collective belief, and how that affects communities, as well as learning to compromise. And these things can all be in this one story with these two plots going back and forth. I think, it's a pretty good episode. So I'm going to give it 6 buckets of oatmeal.
Very nice.
All right, everyone, we would love to hear your thoughts on The Storyteller. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. It's there to extend the conversation beyond the podcasts. It's a closed group, so if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. Once you're in there, you'll see a post for this episode on the timeline, and you can share your thoughts with Matthew and me and fellow listeners right there. Of course, you can send us email if you prefer. Go to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there. Choose to send to a show and choose the orb, and that will come right on over to Matthew and me. And if you'd like to find us in social media, our username everywhere is TrekFM. We are on most of the new platforms as well, so we would love to talk to you there. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we would love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not putting monsters to sleep with your storytelling technique, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, when I'm not putting myself to sleep with my own stories, you can find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02. You can also find me here on the network in the 602 Club, as we're talking about all of the franchises we love outside of Star Trek. We have great time over there. Of course, I'm doing Literary Treks, but the books and the comics of Star Trek. You'll find us on Warp 5, Chris, as we talk about Star Trek Enterprise 20th Anniversary Rewatch. We've got Saddle Up about Strange New Worlds and The Artificial Tango about Star Trek Picard. Over on the Nerd Party Network, I have 2 shows. One is called Owl Post, about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series. And then Aggressive Negotiations, John Mills and I are talking about Star Wars each and every week. But Chris, if people, you know, wanted to see what's happening on your territorial dispute, where can people find you?
It sounds like I have a website called Territorial Dispute or something like that. When I'm not doing that, I'm not preparing that, you can talk to me about other things in social media. My username everywhere is C. Brian Jones, letter C and Brian with a Y. Twitter is where I'm most active, but I'm on Threads and all these other new platforms as well. So I'd love to hear from you there. And then, of course, on the network, as you mentioned, Matthew, you and I do all of those shows together. There's also Interphase. Larry Nemechek and I do The Ready Room from time to time. You can find me in many, many episodes on many shows in the back catalog from the past 13 plus years. So tune into those if you want to hear more Star Trek talk and thoughts from me. And if you would like to help us keep this rewatch and everything else we're doing on the network going, we could definitely use your help. To find out how to support the network, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We would not be here without your support. So a huge thank you goes out to everyone who is supporting us now. Well, Matthew, I think we're going to make a little progress on our rewatch next week as we talk about the episode with the same name.
Well, Chris, I can't wait to dive into that. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening, and we will see you next time as we gaze into the orb.
Recording. Dal Rock in town, 5 nights only.
Sunday, come see the Dal Rock.
The band that fans can't wait to see leave town.
Oh, man.
All right. Here we go.